Any other council
reports? This meeting
reports?
Is being recorded.
If not, we'll go to the Ms. Jacobs will present her report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm just going to piggyback on to what Council Member Green said and let you know about our latest podcast, which is with John Spiker, and it's about monsoon preparedness. And I was thinking today that maybe if we all actually brought our umbrellas to work or wherever we're going, that maybe it would facilitate starting some rain. So let's hope so. Everybody put your umbrella in your car, in your purse, and let's see if we can't get some good vibes going. We're not sure how our monsoon's going to behave this year, but actually I think you'll be interested in what John has to say, because he does have some information on the predictions for monsoons. So I'm going to use that as a little tease and have everybody join the podcast. Yesterday, the town received its pricing for the planned public safety pension obligation bonds. And I'm really pleased to let our community know that we received an all-in interest rate of 2.39%. And this is very significant for the size of the bond offering that we were making, which is about $18 million. Our projections were based on 2.75%. So we estimate at this juncture that it will save us about an additional $187,000 to the community and our residents. Also, I have some good news and I have some bad news about Oracle Road paving. The good news is it's going to be paved. We've been informed that it looks like tentatively the area from McGee to Calle Concordia will be paved starting July 20th. It'll take about 4 weeks. The bad news is Oracle Road's going to be paved. And so there's going to be a lot of congestion during that time. I would ask people to put their patient hats on if they're going to be driving on Oracle in late July and basically for the month of August. Also, I'm excited to tell you that the multi-use path that was repaved at the Oro Valley Marketplace is now completed, and we are opening it to the public on Friday. So it's been striped. It looks beautiful. I want to thank our Public Works Department and our contractor for doing an outstanding job on that. It really did turn out great. Also, regarding an update on the potential purchase of the former Vistoso Golf Course, there does seem to be a bit of misperception that Romspen and the participating parties have not agreed upon the terms for the purchase of the property. In fact, those terms have been agreed upon. However, the terms are contingent upon an appraisal supporting a component of the purchase. And as I've mentioned previously, that appraisal is currently underway with a firm that was agreed upon by Romspen, the Conservation Fund, and the town. And as you can imagine, with a very active real estate market at the moment, the time frame for which a commercial appraisal can be conducted has been lengthened. We've been told the appraisal will be finalized next month. So in the meantime, the Conservation Fund and a private developer remain actively engaged in this effort, and we look forward to hopefully being able to brief the community in the near future. And finally, just a reminder not to miss the town's fireworks on the 4th. They are scheduled for 9 p.m. They're going to be shot off at Naranja Park. Again, a reminder that we will not have an in-person event. There will be no people allowed on the park during the fireworks shoot. So we ask that you find another spot, your friend's backyard, for a barbecue if they live in the neighborhood. And if you don't want to get out, but you want a really great seat to watch the fireworks, we're also going to stream it on Facebook Live. So you can stay home in the comfort and air conditioning of your home and still enjoy the fireworks. And that concludes my report, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. We appreciate that. A lot of good news in that report. The agenda will remain as posted. This meeting is taking place online for a bit longer, although good progress is being made on the council chambers. We'll allow for the community's continued ability to participate in these public meetings. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. I'd like to remind participants how this will work. Staff and members of the council, except for the individual that has the floor, will mute their microphones and throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. During times when public can participate, staff will enable you to unmute your microphone at the appropriate time. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. And there are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, place your cursor towards the bottom middle of the page and look for the raised hand icon. Once the raised hand icon has been located, click on the raised hand icon to raise your hand to request to speak. For those participating via phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to address the council. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so that you can speak. If you would like to have your video enabled, please request so prior to your comments and staff will enable your video. Once you are done speaking, staff will move you back to the attendee list. You may experience a momentary disconnect while changing roles. Please make sure you are not also muted on your personal device. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. Currently, there are 84 participants in our meeting this evening. That includes the council, staff, and members of the public. I will now go to the call to audience portion of our agenda. This is your opportunity to speak on any topic other than what's on the agenda tonight. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. If you wish to address the council on a matter not on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raised hand icon on your computer or pressing *9 on your phone now. We have one hand raised. I'd like to call on Mr. Dan McLaughlin to address the council. Staff, if you would please enable Mr. McLaughlin's microphone.
Mr. Mayor, I hope my audio is such that you can hear me.
Yes, there's a little bit of background, but we can hear you.
Okay, I'm not sure what I can do to improve the quality, so I'll just be quick. My name is Dan McLaughlin. I am a property owner, part-time resident of Oro Valley. I work on a property that's immediately adjoining the abandoned Vistoso Gulf property. I'd like to say thank you to the town council and especially town manager Jacobs for the progress that they've made to date toward getting the abandoned golf course protected as a nature preserve and trail area. And I'm really, really happy to hear that a new appraisal is finally being conducted. But I would like to ask that once this appraisal is done and fair market value has been determined, that if Romston contests the fair market value or otherwise delays the proceedings any further, because this has been a long, drawn-out process, I think we would all agree, that if there's any further delay, I would encourage the town council to immediately initiate condemnation proceedings and keep the ball rolling. I believe that doing this will make it clear that the town council is serious about getting the matter resolved, not being indefinitely delayed by the property owner, and serious about listening to the voices of the residents of Oro Valley. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to call on, this is a phone number, 780-0554 to address the council. Staff, please enable 780-4554's microphone to speak. Your microphone has been enabled. Yes.
Good evening. My name is Teresa Morrow, and I'm a 19-year resident of Oro Valley. My comments are regarding the former Vistoso Golf Course. It has now been more than 3 years that the residents of the 10 neighborhoods surrounding the former golf course have been waiting for resolution to this prolonged nightmare with Roms Pen. We understand there is an impending appraisal that will be available no later than August 15th. It is predictable the appraisal will not meet Roms Pen's hostage price for the defunct golf course. We, the residents, are imploring the town council to act immediately upon receipt of the appraisal. If Roms Pen fails to accept the fair market value, the town council must condemn the property immediately. We are asking the town council to provide the residents with definitive steps and the corresponding timeline for immediate resolution. If the town council does not take action timely, the town of Oro Valley risks losing the support of community members. This three-year nightmare must end. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
I'd like to call on Ms. Tammy Medlin to address the council. Staff, please enable Ms. Medlin's microphone.
Yeah, hi, this is John Medlin and Tammy Medlin here. This is her husband. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we've been Vistoso Oro Valley residents for now here about 4 years. Previously, we lived in Tucson up by McGee in the Oracle area. And we love it here. We're right by the driving range in the first tee, and catty corner to us is the golf course. Now that's been rezoned for high density housing, which should probably appease Romson. But like the people said before me, we implore you people to hang tough with this Romson crowd. They may not like their appraisal, but I think we need to push ahead. And so enough's enough. There's a lot of support behind this. 1,800 plus residents here have voted in favor of preserving Vistoso. And in addition to the conservation fund state monies, you have a lot of private funds available. So this is a no-brainer, guys. So keep up the good work. And it's like dealing with any other adversary. If we have to deal with from a position of strength, we do so. And we have to condemn it to get them to the table, then so be it. So keep up the good work. And thanks for the good news. Take care.
Seeing no raised hands, I'll close call to audience. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. As allowed, I have to call the audience. Council may propose a future agenda item, which I am going to do now. There's an enormous amount of misconception, some misinformation surrounding the preservation of the Vistoso course. Admittedly, part of that problem is because many things have been confidential during these negotiations. So my motion to put on the next council meeting's agenda, which is on July 7th, is discussion of the current status and possible action regarding the efforts to preserve the former Vistoso golf course. To facilitate this item, the town attorneys are to work with all involved parties to obtain any confidential releases necessary to allow for an open public discussion.
Does that require a second, Mr. Mayor?
It does.
I would okay. Second that.
And I'll third it.
If Mr. Standish needs me to text this or email to him for the exact word, and I'll be happy to do that.
Mr. Rothschild, do you have any? No comment.
No, we'll see what we can do given the nature of the matter that is subject to executive proceedings. And contract negotiation and litigation. But to the extent we can do more, we'll let you know.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we've closed call to audience. I'm going to adjourn the regular session and call the special session to order. Mr. Standish, item one.
Well, public hearing, resolution number R21-26, approving the adoption of the final budget of the Town of Oro Valley for fiscal year 2021-22, including approval of the 10-year capital improvement program from fiscal year 2021-22 through fiscal year 2030-31 and the fiscal year 2021-22 salary classification plan.
And Dave Gephardt, our Chief Financial Officer, will present this item.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We should have a very, very short presentation for you this evening. We'll go next slide, please. We'll go ahead and get this started. The budget before you this evening for adoption and finalization is the same budget that was approved by you as council at the June 2nd meeting, which set the expenditure limitation of about $162 million. The adoption of the final budget includes, as was mentioned, the 10-year capital improvement program, as well as the adoption of the general pay plan. It also includes items related to the strategic leadership plan that was approved by council, and as well, you as council have the authority, of course, to amend the budget throughout the fiscal year. Next slide, please. So as mentioned, it establishes the overall expenditure limitation of about $162 million. Just as a quick refresher, the primary drivers of that amount and why it's so much greater than the current year budget are it includes a $25 million parks bond issuance. It also includes the $17 million PSPRS bond issuance, as well as a $10 million PSPRS payment from reserves. And when you add all of those items together, that they sum up to about $52 million. You subtract that out of the $162 million, you're left with about $110 million, which is pretty much right in line with our $105 million budget for the current fiscal year. Those budget figures, as required, will be posted submitted and published to the state auditor's Auditor General's office. The budget will also be submitted to the GFOA for their Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. And as always, the budget reflects the careful allocation of our available resources as a town. Next slide, please. With that, I would be happy to entertain any questions the council may have. As a reminder, the council can choose this evening to reduce the budget. It cannot choose to increase the budget. That is per Arizona revised statutes. Thank you. That concludes my presentation, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Before we take questions from Council, there is an open or a public hearing associated with this special session agenda item. So I'm going to open the public hearing at this time. If there are members of the public that would like to speak to this particular agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. I'll wait a moment while you raise your hand or press *9 on your telephone. Again, if you would like an opportunity to speak to this particular agenda item as part of the special session, this is your opportunity to do so. You would go to the center of your screen, press on the raised hand icon, or press *9 on your phone. There are presently 80 participants in our meeting. That's a combination of council staff and the public. There are no raised hands. I'm going to close the public hearing. Councilmember Green.
Question for Mr. Gephardt. Dave, you and your staff will be monitoring this throughout the year, I assume, so that if it looks like it might be headed south, we'll be in a position to be able to react quickly. Is that correct?
Council Member Green, Mayor, members of council, yes, absolutely. We always perform regular monitoring on a monthly basis and of the budget and as in relation to actual results. We also, on a pretty much a monthly basis, present that information of our major funds both to the Budget and Finance Commission as well as Town Council. So our town is very nimble. We've proven that in the past, that we're very dedicated to being responsible stewards of the taxpayers' resources. And if we do see some sort of shift or something that would cause us to reduce or make some assumption changes, we will not hesitate to do that. We will also bring those decisions as necessary before council for approval. So
thank you very much.
Councilmember Solomon.
First, I have some questions on the 10-year CIP slide, if that could be brought up. If you could go down to the, I believe it was the tabula view where it had the CIP broken down by category. Well, I can ask one of the questions while you're trying to find out. Parks and Recs has a $22.3 million line item in the 10-year CIP. And I just wanted to clarify something. My understanding is, based on what council had approved, is that this is just a placeholder, that each specific item would have to come before council and be approved by council before any spending was authorized for that improvement.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I'll jump in on that one. Yes, I will tell you that with the council's change of the $25 million bond at the end, we did not spend any time on updating our 10-year CIP. We will do that during the course of this year. We just did not have time to do that. And so the 10-year CIP is really intended to help us get a flavor for the kinds of things that we might see over the course. But nothing is done without the explicit approval of the council year by year in the budget process. So, and with this process, with the master plan, you know, being completed, we're going to want to spend a little bit of time looking out those 10 years again and figuring out what that's going to look like, and we'll do that during the course of this fiscal year.
Okay, so we'll be looking at the whole picture, not just Parks and Recs, but any other potential capital needs, such as maintaining or improving existing facilities. Okay, so
yes, that's good
for us to know and the public to know. That's just a placeholder, because when we approve a budget, we are not allowed to spend more than what's approved. So in some cases, we actually put a figure in there, which we may have, may or may not spend. Okay. Next question is, I know we're doing the $17 million bond for the police retirement and got a great rate. In addition to that $17 million, because I'm not totally clear on this, is what other bonds have been approved or are we looking at approving for this budget cycle?
Yeah, so
Dave, go ahead.
Councilmember Solomon, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So the Parks $25 million bond is also loaded into this budget, as mentioned previously. That would be a tax exempt issuance and could happen towards the first part of the fiscal year. It's not time sensitive or time specific, so It is something that we could delay or defer, certainly, but it has been included in the budget as well, because that will allow us to move forward with council direction with making improvements both to the golf course irrigation project, but also the Naranja Park project and any other parks-related projects that the council directs us to move forward on.
That in addition to the $22 million we were just talking about?
Council Member Solomon, Mayor, members of council, no, that would be inclusive. The $22 million is included in that $25 million issuance.
Right.
The next question I have is, and I believe Wendy has it available, is on the five-year forecast that we took a look at last meeting. There's a graph that represents income and expenses and our fund balance. Is that something we can bring up for some questions?
Council Member Solomon, Mayor, members of council, certainly we can, I think we can talk about grants, grant revenue that would be included in next year's budget. And certainly the ARPA money, the American Rescue Plan Act, it is included in the general fund for next fiscal year. We included about $5.5 million. That's actually low. We're now finding that that number needs should be about $7.5 million, but we weren't aware of that up until recently, and was not included. That increased amount was not included in the tentative budget. So, so we are a little bit confined on that, but that impacts both our projected carry forward revenues in the general fund as well as our total revenues, carry forward resources in the general fund as well as our total revenues for next fiscal year.
And I believe we do have that slide ready. Wendy, can you share your screen? We'll just make it easy. I think we sent it to Nick, but it was last minute. So if you want to share your screen, I think that'll be the easiest.
Yes, I can do that. Bear with me just a minute. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, was it this one that you were wanting?
No, we go to the next. There's the graphical representation that makes it a lot easier to see. Oh, there we go. Okay, so based on this current budget and some other projections, we see this big spike in spending here over the next year, where we're going from about $42 million to $60 million. Now, I know we have, I'm assuming part of that is the $10 million for paying down the retirement fund. What else is in there to cause this big spike in our expenditures? And while at the same time we're seeing a drop in our revenues, and we end up with a fund balance going from our current close to $29 million, which I know is more than required, but we're dropping that down to about $15 million and then down to $10 million. So what's going on here as far as our spending goes that's causing this big drop in the fund balance?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that is, yes, I mean, the big chunk of it is the $10 million PSPRS payment, but then it's also the timing with the American Rescue Plan dollars and the timing of both of those payments with the transfers out to the capital fund for some of that, for some of those funding initiatives. Okay. That's the bulk of what's driving that. You know, it's a plan drawdown and fund balance, if that helps. And those are the two main areas that are attributable to that increase.
Yes, that helps. And I guess we can always take a look sometime during the year if we feel we're getting too low in our fund balance and want to make some adjustments in the future budgets. So, okay, well, that's great. Those were the questions I have. I really appreciate all the answers and the expertise of our our staff that's able to answer these things pretty much on the spot. So thank you for that.
Any additional questions?
Mr. Mayor, before you vote, may I just make a few remarks?
Yes.
I just wanted to take another opportunity to recognize my team for the incredible work that they have done in preparing, spending a lot of time on this budget, responding to new initiatives on the part of council and getting things through, especially our Chief Financial Officer, Dave Gephardt, Wendy Gomez, and Michael Dykeman. They have been the core. But the rest of the budget team, Chris Cornelison and Chuck Boyer, and then, of course, all of my leadership team. This really is a team effort. We're pleased and privileged to present you with a budget that we feel is going to move this community forward in the future. And we thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. I move to approve resolution number R21-26, approving the adoption of the final budget of the Town of Oral Valley for the fiscal year 2021-22, including the FY 2021-22 salary classification plan, and further move to approve the Town of Oral Valley 10-year capital improvement program for FY 2021-22 through FY 2030-31.
I would second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? I would like to echo Ms. Jacobs' comments and express my appreciation to Ms. Jacobs and to our financial department, to the executive team, to all department staff, and the staff as a whole. The budget is representative of the commitment of the staff, and we appreciate their responsiveness to the community and to the council. So thank you so much. Mr. Standish, a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes.
Councilmember Green.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion is approved as 6-0. Thank you, Council. And now we'll adjourn the special session and reconvene the regular session. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I'll second.
Councilmember Nicholson seconded. Any discussion? Before taking the vote, Mr. Standish, would you read the consent agenda items, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Item A, minutes, June 2nd, 2021. Item B, reappointment of citizen member Richard Tracy to the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Local Board. Item C, resolution number R21-27, authorizing and approving an intergovernmental agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and the Pima County Jail to provide officer coverage for video proceedings between the jail and the court. Item D, resolution number R21-28, authorizing and approving an intergovernmental agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and Pima County regarding payment for the incarceration of municipal prisoners. Item E, request for approval of revised architecture for development area C of the La Posada Senior Living Facility located on the southeast corner of Naranja Drive and First Avenue. Item F, approval to move the September 1st and September 15th, 2021 regular council meeting dates to September 8th and September 22nd, 2021, respectively. Item G, resolution number R21-29, approving an intergovernmental agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and Pima County to provide funding for the Pima Early Education Program and directing the town manager, town clerk, town legal services director, or their duly authorized officers and agents to take all steps necessary to carry out the purpose and intent of this resolution. And item H, resolution number R21-30, adopting the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Pension Funding Policy and accepting the town's share of assets and liabilities under the PSPRS Actuarial Revaluation Report.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, would you take the roll call vote, please?
Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes.
Councilmember Green.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield.
Yes. Motion passes 6-0. Mr. Standish, if you'd read the first item of our regular agenda.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding an application for a Series 12 restaurant liquor license for Tuk Tuk Thai located at 12125 North Oracle Road, Suite Number 169.
And you'll present this item?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So, as the item title states, the application for a new Series 12 liquor license has been submitted by Kevin Arnold Kramer for Tuk Tuk Thai, located at 12125 North Oracle Road, number 169. Mr. Kramer has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the Town of Oro Valley and the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control and has paid all the related fees associated with applying for the liquor license. In accordance with state law, the application was posted for 20 days on the premises, and there were no protests received during this time period. The Oro Valley Police Department has completed their standard background check on Tuk Tuk Thai and Agent Kevin Arnold Kramer, and the Oro Valley Police Department has no objections to the approval of this Series 12 license. And with that, staff does recommend approval. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. There is a public hearing associated with this item for the regular agenda. If you would like to speak to item one of the regular agenda, this is your opportunity to do so. Go to the bottom center of your screen, click on the raised hand icon, or press star 9 on your phone. I'll give the public a moment to do that. And for the public's information, there are 69 participants in our meeting. That is the council, staff, and members of the public. Again, if you would like to speak, there is a public hearing open for item one of the regular agenda, the liquor license for the Tuk Tuk Thai restaurant. Seeing no hands, I'll close the public hearing. Are there any questions from council? Councilmember Green, were you going to make a motion?
Yes, I would move that we accept this application, and I would vote in favor of it.
Okay. Mr. Standish, does the exact verbiage need to be read?
I don't believe so. As long as it's approval for the specified item, I believe that should be sufficient.
Okay. Thank you.
Seconded by you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a motion from Councilmember Green, seconded by Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll go to item two of the regular agenda. Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding an application for a Series 12 restaurant liquor license for Say's Kitchen, located at 9740 North Oracle Road.
And Mr. Standish will make the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Again, as the item states, the town clerk's office has received an application for the Series 12 restaurant license by Jake Jesus Munoz Jr. for Say's Kitchen, located at 9740 North Oracle Road. Mr. Munoz has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the town and to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control and has paid all the related fees associated with applying for the license. In accordance with state law, the application was posted on the premises of the applicant's property for a total of 20 days, and no protests were received during this time period. The Oro Valley Police Department has completed their standard background check on Say's Kitchen and Agent Jake Jesus Nunez Jr. And the Oro Valley Police Department has no objections to the approval of the liquor license. And with that, staff is recommending approval for this one as well. Thank you, Mr.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Standish. There's also a public hearing associated with this item. I will open that public hearing now. If there are members of the public that would like to speak to this particular item two of the regular agenda, this is your opportunity to do so. I'll give you a few minutes to click the raised hand icon or star 9 on your phone. Seeing no raised hands, I will close the public hearing. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to recommend approval of the issuance of a Series 12 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control for Jake Jesus Munoz Jr. for Safe's Kitchen, located at 9740 North Oracle Road.
Councilmember Solomon, did you have your hand raised?
I'll just second that.
Okay, thank you. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. The motion passes 6-0. Mr. Standish, we'll go to item 3A.
3A, resolution number R21-31, declaring the proposed zoning code amendments to chapter 21 and other associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code in Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk, a public record.
So this is simply before going to item B, approval to declare the amendments a public record. Council want to make a motion? So I move to approve resolution number R21-23, declaring the proposed zoning code amendments to chapter 21 and other associated sections of the Oro Valley Zoning Code in attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion passes 6-0. Mr. Standish, we'll go to item 3B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O21-08, amendments to chapter 21 and other associated chapters of the Oro Valley Zoning Code.
Ms. Jacobs will present this item.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I know it's a little unusual to have the town manager reporting and presenting on a zoning code item, but this is a minor matter, but since I briefed the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Historical Preservation Committee, I wanted to also brief the item to you. This item is really a change to a zoning code that the town council, that this town has had in place, and a specific procedure that's been in place since, as we learned, 1986, when the original zoning code was adopted by the town. Which provided for a specific adoption process of the Planning Division work plan. And over the years, and of course, as this organization has matured and in keeping with the council manager form of government, this is the Planning Division work plan was the only work plan that was going to a commission and even coming to council. Well, with the onset of strategic planning, the council's strategic leadership plan, and really the work plan is the result, is the implementation strategy of the policy that the town council establishes. And so this item before you is simply simplifying and making consistent with the approval of all work plans in the town, which really are under my responsibility, and ultimately you hold me accountable for the work that is conducted by this organization. And so while this removes that as a requirement, it certainly does not eliminate the opportunity for the Planning and Zoning Commission, the HPC, or any of the boards and commissions to recommend to the town council objectives or goals that the council may want to consider during your biannual strategic planning process. So this really just simplifies that. The other thing that it is doing is it's codifying the existing general plan annual progress report process, which actually is a responsibility or requirement under state law, but it currently is not in zoning code. So we're using that opportunity to also add that since it reflects the current requirements. This item was discussed and approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission on May 4th. It was also presented to the HPC as an information item just a couple of weeks ago with no objection. And with that, Mr. Mayor, if there are any specific questions that you may have, if I can't answer them, I'm sure our planning staff are happy to. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. There's a public hearing that's associated with this agenda item. I'd like to open the public hearing at this time. If there are any members of the public that would like to speak to this agenda item 3B, this is your opportunity to do so. You go to the center bottom of your screen, click on the raised hand icon or *9 on your phone. There are 62 participants in our meeting comprising council staff and public. Seeing no raised hands, I'm going to close the public hearing. Councilmember Jones Ivy, you are muted.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mary, I really wanted, just for public understanding, some clarity on how this process is any different from what any of the other commissions are doing or the other departments are doing?
Certainly, that's a great question, Councilmember Jones Ivy. No other department presents their work plans to their commissions for approval, only planning. And planning is only one division of four in the Community and Economic Development Department. So really, it's just one quarter of one department's work plan is going through this process where the commission is required to approve it. And then it comes back to council when you've already provided your direction in the strategic leadership plan in terms of what it is that you want to do. That's your policy direction. And so it really is just redundant. It's simply an effort on our part to reflect what is more in keeping with the council manager form of government, which is that you hold me responsible for the implementation of the direction that you give. Mm-hmm. And that's how this council has been doing strategic planning for at least the last 6 to 8 years.
So is the PNC commission, are they on board with this?
They are. In fact, they voted to recommend this to you for approval.
Okay. All right. Fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from council? Seeing none, entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve resolution number R21 through 31.
This is item B, Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I move that we approve ordinance number 21-08, amendments to chapter 21 and other associated chapters of the Oral Valley Zoning Code.
I would second that.
Okay, Councilmember Payne seconded. Thank you. Any discussion, Council? Okay, Mr. Standish, roll call vote. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To Mary and to Beyer and to Paul, I wanted to express my appreciation. I had a number of detailed questions on this week, mm-hmm. and I really appreciate you taking the time to explain it to me. One comment I did want to make is one good way to get recommendations from a commission is to give them an action to review a plan. Do you have any ideas, Mary or Paul or Beyer? How else can we encourage the Planning and Zoning Commission? Perhaps if they do have some input or they did want to make a recommendation, how can they formally do that?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I think that there are lots of different ways, and the P&Z's input on future priorities for the town council shouldn't be just be relegated to the P&Z. You have a wonderful group of commissioners from a wide variety of different areas, and I believe that we can perhaps talk in the future about ways in which we as your team and your commission can more formally and in advance of your strategic planning discussion receive input from them on an ongoing basis. And I'd be happy to discuss that with you in this coming fiscal year and get the input from council, and we can make some changes to our process. This past year was a little unique because we were doing everything via Zoom, but certainly, I will tell you this, while they may not necessarily say, hey, here's an objective you should consider or a goal directly and recommend it to you, our staff is constantly listening to your commissions, as you are, as liaisons. And so one of the things I think that is your responsibility, each of you, as you serve on your commissions, is to hear from your commissions. And then you as liaisons can also bring those ideas and thoughts forward to the council during your strategic planning process. That could be another way to do that. But I'm happy to continue these conversations with you and the council in the coming year.
Thank you, Mary. That was my question, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Seeing none, Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes.
Councilmember Green.
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield.
Yes. The motion passes 6-0. Any future agenda items, Council? Hearing none, I move to close or to adjourn the regular session. I need a second. Seconded by
Council. I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Got lots of seconds. Councilmember Solomon seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Motion passes 6-0. I'd like to call the study session to order. Mr. Standish, item one of the study session.
Presentation and possible discussion regarding amendments to Town Code Chapter 15, Water Code, prohibiting water wasting, impose restrictions during town declared potable water shortages, and impose penalties for failure to comply with water conservation requirements.
Thank you. Peter Abraham, our Water Utility Director, will present this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening, council members. So tonight I'm going to be presenting to the council for the study session proposed amendments to Town Code Chapter 15, and that's our water code. Can we begin the presentation? Next slide, please. So we'll just begin with the genesis of the proposed water code amendments. The water code amendments, they were proposed by the Water Utilities Water Resource and Conservation Subcommittee. And this is a component of our Water Utility Commission. And this goes back to 2017. And we worked on this with our commission body for several years to get to the proposed amendments that we have that I'm presenting to you tonight. The commission agreed on the following objectives. We needed to update the water code to correct deficiencies in the current code, first and foremost. Also, we wanted to update the code to reflect the community's commitment to water conservation, and as well as to support the goals of the town's general plan and strategic leadership plan. We needed to clearly define several things. One of them was water wasting, and determine what is water wasting and to prohibit the act of water wasting. Also, we changed the wording of the water conservation levels to better align with regional definitions, and also to give the utility the tools we need to enforce compliance with the proposed code amendments. Staff is supportive of the commission's proposed water code amendments. Next slide, please. So what are the proposed changes? Portions of 15-1 through 15-3, title, intent, and purpose. We needed to add some definitions that were lacking in the original code. A definition for commercial, multifamily, residential. What does reoccurring mean? And what does wasting water mean? Additionally, we had to make some changes in portions of 15-18 under water conservation. The areas of significant change are 15-18-3, water conservation requirements, 15-18-4, restrictions during town declared water shortages, and 15-18-5, penalties, violations, and enforcement. And finally, portions of 15-19 under violations. We did some article reorganization. It was made a class one misdemeanor and had to talk about tampering with the water system and unauthorized access of the water system. In conclusion, and if we go to the next slide, please. I think it's important for the council to know that, and it's very timely how we're coming to the council with this proposed water code amendment. But what I want to make sure that the council understands is we're not just talking about if we ever got to the point of, you know, regional water service provider curtailments and deliveries to the point that they can't meet the demand of their service areas. I fully believe that, you know, we are so well-firmed in our water resources. This code is probably more going to be exercised just in, say, for example, we have a main break and a portion of our service area, it is possible that we could have challenges in meeting the water resource needs of a portion of our service area. Typically, we get those main breaks repaired in 4 to 6 hours, but there could be a circumstance where a portion of our system is compromised for days or possibly even weeks. And if that were the case, this code amendment gives us the tools to, you know, work with the community in a certain part of our system where we're having challenges providing adequate water resources to meet the demands, especially during the summertime. And what we're looking for is, you know, really to educate, not to penalize our residents. It's just to give us the tools to manage our system during localized water resource challenges. And also it would apply to a regional type shortage as well. And what's important to notice is in the example of the pictures I show here, a day, not daily, but weekly, you know, our staff or the community at large will say, hey, every morning I walk by such and such a business and their irrigation system's malfunctioning and, you know, there's water in the street, you know, every day or three times a week. And fortunately, you know, our residents in our community has such a strong conservation ethic, they get on those repairs right away. But we have had it happen where, and it's not often, maybe once a year, once every 2 years, we'll bring up a deficiency in an irrigation system to somebody and they'll say, hey, it's my water. I can do whatever I want with it. I paid for it. And when we try to educate them, and more often than not, we finally get to, hey, okay, they'll fix it. But this code would just in the rare instance of that where, you know, we would have a means to say, you really need to fix this. And if not, we can, you know, there's a penalty for not doing that. Again, our overreaching goal is not to be the water police. It's just to educate and not necessarily to penalize, but the water code would give us the tools, more tools than we have available to us now for enforcement. And with that, that concludes my presentation on the proposed water code amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Just as a reminder, this is a study session. No action will be taken on this item this evening. I want to thank the commission and our liaison, Councilmember Bowen, to the Water Utility Commission for bringing this forward. Are there questions from council? Councilmember Bowen and then Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you to you and the commission for all of the work and having this available for us to review at a study session. In the past, have we ever had to declare a level 1, 2, 3, or 4 water restrictions? I've only lived here 5 years. Perhaps it's happened. I'm not aware of it.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so we're currently in a level 1, and that's just a self-imposed conservation. So currently we're in level 1, and we've been in level 1 for, I think, for over 10 years now. And I think most of our water service provider neighbors are similarly in whatever their first level of would be.
Okay, and if someone was curious as to, you know, that we've announced a level 1, is there some place on our website, particularly on your page, where we could find that? How would that be public knowledge, I guess, is the way I'd like to ask it.
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, that's a great question. That's going to be part of our continuing public outreach that we do with our community. You can expect to see that in our fall newsletter. We recently started a quarterly newsletter. In the summer newsletter, we're talking about water shortage. And then in the fall, we'll be talking about just this exact kind of thing, making our community aware of you know, our water resource position and the fact that we are in a level 1 restriction.
Okay. I had noticed and we had exchanged some emails regarding the fact that the proposal is to have the levels named simply as levels, level 1 water restrictions through level 4 water restrictions. And, you know, I was curious, you know, as to your thoughts. For example, in level 4, and Peter, this is just me as a resident reading the code. You know, I'm seeing a situation with level 4, and I'm not knowing if there's a level 5, 6, or 7 where the water situation for Oro Valley could be considered fairly dire at that point. We have an indefinite capacity to meet current demand at that point. And I just wanted, you know, your thoughts on that. I mean, for me, that if that's the highest level, then I would hope that people would know that's the highest level and that we need to take all appropriate actions at that point. You said you were concerned that perhaps the messaging could be a little bit confusing, or perhaps we can imply there's a greater, you know, need or problem within the entire Southern Arizona area rather than just Oro Valley. Can you kind of share that with us, why we would be concerned about messaging and how
sure.
It could be harmful?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, and that was an excellent question you had. And for the rest of council, one of the changes we had made is, you know, levels 2, 3, and 4, we had words in there like we were at an emergency level, a crisis level, and we just made it levels, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And what has happened in the past, and we wanted to avoid that with this code amendment, is say another water service provider has an isolated problem within their water system, and they're in a crisis level. And in their due diligence to let their community know that, hey, a portion of our system is compromised, we really need you to restrict your water usage, they'll let the press know, hey, we have a portion of our system, we have a problem, we're in a a crisis level water restriction. And what happens is, and it's not due to a bad intent, but it gets put out there in the news for all of Southern Arizona that there's a water crisis or a water emergency. And sometimes the story isn't put in the proper context that, no, it's one water service provider and a part of their system. And then all of a sudden, all the water service providers start getting inundated with calls and like, you know, oh my God, what, and almost a state of panic sets in. We wanted to avoid that. We want to be very clear in messaging to our community, but not confuse the surrounding communities as to our water resource challenges or that we might be having in a part of our system. So we took out the words like, you know, emergency and crisis. Now, part of our messaging with our community is, hey, if this code amendment is passed, is we will explain we have these different water resource levels. This is what they mean, that this is the how high they go to. And I think if this code amendment, when we get to that point, is passed, our work is not done. Now we have to roll it out to the community and have them understand what our code means. Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, that was a long answer. I hope that answered the question.
Yes, thank you. And I have a follow-up because when we say we're at resource status level 4, we describe this as periods when water demand exceeds total production capability. And Peter, could you help, you know, you're the expert on water. Could you help make that real for us? You know, thank goodness we've never even been to level 2 in the last 10 years. But if we ever get to level 4, what is it like for us and what could we expect?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so right now our production capacity, we have excess capacity. We're able to produce more water than we could use during peak hour, peak day. So we have excess capacity. And, but what happens is if a portion of our system is compromised or, you know, God forbid, if we ever had restrictions in our resource availability, what could happen is that excess capacity could go away. And if we get to a point where, and this has happened to other water service providers before we had the CAP resources we've had now, where every morning that reservoir, it's a foot lower than it was the day before and everything's running. All the pumps are running. All your production facilities are running. That's when, you know, your demand is in excess of your capability to produce water. So that's really a level 4 for us, is if demand outstrips our capability to supply, that's when we really need to start, you know, looking at implementing like a level 4 restriction. But it's all dependent on our ability to maintain, you know, our water reserves in our system. You know, we have lots of reservoirs. And typically the way we operate is, you know, every night we fill up our reservoirs. And then during the day, we back the system off. We're not running full bore. Even now, you know, we're running at 70-80% capacity. We let those reservoir levels slowly go down just to take it easy on the system. And then at night we fill them up again. But, you know, there could be this circumstance where a portion of our system, you know, we can't keep up. Every morning that reservoirs or those reservoirs are a little lower, a little lower, a little lower. And then we have to go into mitigation to avoid it from dropping to a point that's we can't recover from.
Can you describe, I mean, that's not a pleasant situation, but some of the areas of infrastructure where if they weren't available, perhaps we could find ourselves conceivably in a level 4 and what we should be, you know, looking out for.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, you mean in like what parts of our system are could be at risk for that happening?
Or what failures of what parts of our system could conceivably put us in a level 4?
We do have parts of our system that maybe doesn't have what I would call adequate looping or, you know, different. We like to loop our system. We don't like having just one main go into an area. We like having lots of mains, but we do have some areas that are. You know, there's not a lot of redundancy in the supply. Now we do existing system improvements to, and every year we whittle away at eliminating those choke points in our system. But we do have portions of our system that aren't well looped. They're not don't have a lot of redundancy of supply, or the system pressure isn't maintained by a reservoir. And those portions of our system, if we had a main break in one of those areas, we'd be solely dependent on the water we had stored in that area to keep that area in service. So we would need to get, you know, that main repaired as quickly as possible. But those are like the worst case scenarios. And every year those areas become less and less and less.
As we grow around them, or as we add new infrastructure, we strengthen those areas in terms of their looping capability.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so every year part of our CIP, we add in one or two projects where we'll add an additional main, or we'll add what we call a PRV, where we'll take water from a higher zone and provide a way to drop it into a lower zone that doesn't have a lot of supply. Every year, you'll notice in our capital improvement project, you'll see a main project with a street name associated with it, or a PRV. Those are the kind of projects we do every year to build system redundancy or supply redundancy.
And thank you, Peter. That's what I wanted, you know, people to hear, is that some of our infrastructure projects, they also improve the long-term reliability of the system. And that's why we need to always be cognizant of those. Those are my questions, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy. And then Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Peter, when I look at the need to clearly define water wasting and prohibit the act of water wasting, is this an issue, a big issue, a small issue? What kind of issue is it for our community?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, fortunately for our community, it's almost a non-issue. Like I had mentioned, okay, End of my presentation, this community has a very strong conservation ethic and they want to do the right thing. We saw a need to update the code, and we saw a need to confirm the code and to give the utility tools for more of like doomsday type scenarios. But honestly, I don't expect us to have to utilize the additional tools that this code provides the utility. We always strive for the educational solution set first. And okay, that we have staff that's their sole purpose is to educate and to come beside our customers and explain water resources in Southern Arizona and in Noro Valley.
Okay. The reason why I was wondering, and I was looking at the slides that you showed to demonstrate examples of water wasting, and I felt like if it was an issue for us specifically, who would be responsible for, and I know that you don't want us to become the police or anything, but it just gives me the feeling that if we're going to clearly define it and prohibit the act, then somebody has to be responsible for identifying the problem and making sure it doesn't happen. So how are we going to work around that besides education?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, nothing would change from what we do now. We are contacted by the community. You know, lots of folks go for walks in the morning when these irrigation systems are operating or malfunctioning. I would say it's about 50-50. We get notified by concerned residents, as well as our own staff, going about their daily business. They'll see malfunctioning irrigation systems. And we do have staff. We have a water conservation specialist, and as well as our meter operator staff. They're trained, working with the customers. But we wouldn't need any additional staff. It'd be exactly how we do it now. The only thing this proposed amendment does is it gives us some additional tools. It provides definitions.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Peter.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Hi, Peter. So we've been in a drought for 22 years, and I might have missed it, but you said we've been level one for 10 years?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, yeah, at least 10 years. I mean, since before my time here, for sure.
Okay. Anyway, did we ever tell customers or the council before then? So I mean, I know the state's going to level one this year, but I don't remember hearing that we were in level one.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, I that was before my time. I don't know. I would expect that would be, you know, something the council would be made aware of at the time. But okay. But I'm not privy to if that was done or not.
Okay, thanks.
We have Council Member Solomon with institutional memory with a raised hand.
I don't know when that happened either. be honest with you, I mean, considering the fact that we're exceeding our capacity and produce more water than we need, it's almost hard to understand why we're even at a level one. But once again, I understand that it's, you know, we depend on the Colorado River and of course on monsoons. So it varies. I'm just going to make the comment is extending this out to potential new buildings, which is actually still relatively historically low within the community, is the building codes over the years have continually evolved to require a large amount of water conservation. The fact that almost any fixture put into a home has to be low water usage. For example, you run a shower, I believe it's going 1 gallon per minute. If you do your low flow toilet flush. So just from the fact that over the last 20 years, these have been implemented on every new home that's been built, not to mention people who've retrofitted their existing homes and I believe Peter has shown us how the water usage has actually dropped. So we're definitely, as far as usage goes, in the right direction. And, you know, most of these leaks that we see are irrigation leaks. So, you know, that's something we just need to keep on top of. And one final comment is, you know, the water utility implemented this program years ago about where you'd be notified if your water usage went up and that alerted you to a potential leak. Once again, I know personal experience, it's usually some hidden corner of your backyard under a bush that you're not noticing. But council received an email from somebody commenting on that where this past week they typically use very little water, but they got the alert that notified them. I think ironically, they were complaining that they thought it took the water utility too long to get the alert to them. And somehow they were responsible now, since we offered this program, you know, an instantaneous response. But in summary, basically, the water utility is really on top of this. And I mean, it's incredible to hear we have excess capacity. We can make more water than this community needs on the hottest hour of the hottest day. So, boy, that's just an amazing testament to the long range. This doesn't happen overnight. It's the long range planning of pump stations, or as you discussed, adding new water mains, making sure that every area, the water mains are looped so that you don't have a dead end pipe. If a pipe breaks, there's an alternative to deliver water there. So I think this has been really educational. I really appreciate the water utility and the water commission of taking a look at these issues so that if there is indeed an emergency, we're not caught off guard and we're told you cannot tell that person that they're wasting water. So what's nice is to have these definitions in place just in case.
Other questions? Mr. Abraham, Council Member Nicholson.
Sorry, it's last second. Are we still going to be having overcapacity once, like, all the houses and apartments, especially at the town center, get developed?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nixon, I just want to give you some context on this. It's only thanks to this council and the previous council's support of the 2018 $6 million bond that we have this excess capacity. It was just not even, I think, maybe 3 years ago. I think it was during town manager Jacob's first year where, because of maybe aging infrastructure, we had lost, and it was in the summertime, a couple wells, and we had lost the wheeling capacity at one of our wheeling stations for several weeks. And I had a portion of the system that was, I was borderline, like every day I was talking to town manager Jacobs saying, we're okay, but nothing else can go wrong. Thanks to that $6 million 2018 bond money, we've rehabilitated almost half of our wells, upgraded booster stations, rehabilitated reservoirs, hydro tanks, really put that money to good use, such that that is why now we have that excess capacity. So that excess capacity, that's new for us, and it's awesome. Now, to answer your question, my goal is, yes, to maintain that excess capacity. And how will we do that? That's where the NWRRDS comes in. Having that up to an additional 4,000 acre feet of CAP to deliver our to our service area. I'm very conservative by nature. My overreaching goal is to maintain our system to have excess capacity. So I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to say yes. My intent is, even with that additional demand, we will maintain excess capacity. Now, over the next 2 or 3 years, we might lose a little bit of excess capacity depending on the continued conservation ethic of the community and how we use our resources. But as soon as 2024 comes along and we get those additional CAP resources, we'll be able to maintain that state of having excess capacity.
Okay. So the excess capacity we should be able to have it with 8,000 acre feet with our RWDDS?
NWRRDS.
Okay. But yeah, we're able to, all those homes will still have excess capacity if we get the 8,000 acre feet. But if we don't get the 8,000 acre feet, will we still be at capacity or over capacity, I should say?
No, our future, our sustainability for future growth or supplying future growth is dependent on those additional capacities. That is still, that's without additional groundwater pumping. My overreaching goal is less groundwater pumping, not more. Now, we have our well field, our capacity to pump groundwater is much more than what we need. We've really backed off on our groundwater pumping, but okay, I could meet the need, but I'd be pumping harder on the aquifer, and I don't want to do that. To not do that and meet future demand, I need NWRRDS.
And my last question too is, how does that affect with Utah? I know Utah, like, they had a capacity, let's say, is 10 units. They were allowed to do 10 units from the Colorado River system, but they're only taking like 4 or 5, but now they're building a lot more communities, and now they're asking to receive their full, I don't know, allowance, I should say, for the Colorado River project. How do you think that affects Arizona as a whole, not just Oro Valley directly, but do you see that as more of a problem in the next coming, I don't know, 3 to 5 years?
So what happens is, yes, more and more communities are taking delivery of their allocations. That the communities that didn't take their allocations, that used to be considered excess capacity on the Colorado River. And all of the states got a portion of that excess capacity. And what Arizona did with that excess capacity is we took the water they didn't use and we stored it throughout Arizona in underground storage facilities. What's happened now is, well, because of shortage and because of communities or states taking their full allocation because they've built the infrastructure to use it, excess capacity on the Colorado River has gone away. So, I mean, is that a problem? I mean, they have the legal right to it. You know, it's just, and we knew that day was coming. I don't know if I would define it as a problem, but it just means that there's no longer excess capacity on the Colorado River, if there ever really was any.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Peter. To help give the public a little bit of context, and please correct me if I'm wrong, we use approximately 10,000 acre feet a year in the town, give or take a little. And the capacity of the Northwest Recharge Recovery District is about 4,000 acre feet. So I just wanted everybody to know, I mean, that's a game changer, but it's never going to satisfy all of our needs, even our current needs, much less with growth. And I wanted, Peter, maybe you could share with people why well rehabilitation is so important and why, you know, groundwater is always going to be part of our future. And why do wells need to be rehabilitated periodically?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen. So like any infrastructure, you know, to realize its full service life, which should be 50 to 100 years, depending on the construction of it. You know, typically every 10 years, you need to pull the pump. And you, when I say rehabilitation, what we do is we pull the pump and we take a video log of the well, look at how the screen's doing. Are there any perforations? Is there any corrosion? And then we go through kind of like with a big toothbrush and we brush it. We call it brushing, in fact. And then we bale it, meaning we take out everything we brushed out. And then we go back in and video it, and we see how we did, or if there were perforations in the well casing, we repair it. So it's no different than, you know, changing the oil on your car. You know, we go through and rehabilitate things, and then we equip it with a new pump and new components. Maybe we rewind the motor. And when we do that, we know that the well's in good shape. We've re-equipped it with new capital infrastructure, and we can expect another 10 years of uninterrupted, reliable service out of it. And for me, my experience is every 10 years, you should go back into your wells. So for here in Oro Valley, once we're trying to get caught up on that, but once we do every year, I expect to rehabilitate, you know, two to three wells. And then after 10 years, I'm right back to where I was 10 years ago, and I just do it all over again. You do that, you keep up that kind of a capital reinvestment program. Having a well go down on you unexpected is literally would be unheard of. It's when you don't keep after things that, you know, you end up with these catastrophic, unexpected pump failures and wells collapsing and those sorts of things. So we need it. And now, and to your second part of your question, we want to maintain a robust groundwater pumping capability in excess of what we need, because that's our backup supply. Listen, mains break. Contractors, you know, hit mains, they break. There's natural disasters. If we lose, let's say, for example, we're very dependent on NWRRDS, and for some reason there's a main break on that, and it goes out of service for a week. I need to have the groundwater pumping capability to make up that difference. And right now, we have the groundwater pumping capability. If we lost all of our CAP wheeling stations, we would get by on groundwater because we have the capability to do that. Now, is that what we want to do in perpetuity? Of course not. It's just until we get those other assets back in service. Another reason we want groundwater is our groundwater is of a very high quality. CAP water is a little harder, higher total dissolved solids. So we blend our groundwater with our CAP water to try and give our customers the water aesthetic that they've grown accustomed to in terms of taste, you know, how their dishes come out of their dishwasher, those sorts of things. So, and that's why we will always use groundwater to some extent, hopefully at a 100% sustainable capacity. Thank you.
Okay. And not understanding the system like you do, if a well does fail, we lose a pump or something like that, does that have a significant local effect, or is that sort of more of a system-wide effect? The entire well field can compensate for one well failing for a short period of time.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, and that goes exactly to our previous discussion about every year that the capital reinvestment work we do and the existing system improvement work we do. Right now, if we could lose any well anywhere in our system and we're okay. Some parts of our system, we could have two or three wells go out of service and we would be okay. And that's because of the redundancy we have, the looping of our system, and the storage reservoirs.
Thank you, Peter, for those answers. Mr. Mayor, those are my questions.
Other questions? Mr. Abraham, Councilmember Green and Councilmember Jones-Ivey and I were in Saddlebrook earlier this week visiting with some of our friends north of us. And the question of water came up, and they asked what were the sources of water in our community. And we responded groundwater, Central Arizona Project water, and reclaimed water. Was that a correct answer?
Mr. Mayor, that was a perfect answer.
And good. We don't want to be giving false information to our neighbors. And you mentioned, I just want to clarify, our groundwater use, which I'm very appreciative of, has been in decline. We're not using as much groundwater as we have historically. And that's because of the Central Arizona Project water. My presumption is that our CAP use has been increasing. And I realize we haven't been using our full allocation, but so would it be true or not true that overall potable water use is increasing in our community versus decreasing?
So Mr. Mayor, up until the last 2 years, it may be three, I have to go back and look at the data. We're in our third year. So after this year, up until the last two and a half years, our potable water usage has decreased, even though our customer base has increased. What I've noticed in 2019, 2020, and so far through 2021, we've been increasing in the last 3 years. Now, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that could be. You know, 2020 was the year of COVID. A lot of folks were at home, and we noticed increased consumption. In 2021, it might still be due to that, but I can't deny the fact that the hotter and drier it is, the more water we consume. But we need more time to let the data express itself and to interpret it. You know, one of the my questions I've asked myself is, have we reached the climactic limit on the conservation ethic of Oro Valley? Maybe we're getting close to where, you know, we've gotten as much juice out of the squeeze as we can, but I don't know yet. But the last 2 years, for sure, our potable water use has increased. In subsequent years, it had not been on a declining trend. And now I'm seeing an uptick on that. But I need a little more time to see how the data plays out.
Thank you for that clarification. In your photos of water wasting, it showed water at the surface. Of course, with water lines being subsurface, there may be instances when water is not at the surface, so you don't see it visually. And I presume that could still be considered water wasting in a sense. I mean, if it's unknown to somebody, it's not really water wasting, but we're wasting water because we're losing water from the system that we don't want to be losing. What is the mechanism, or what to try to discover those situations where the water isn't surfacing, but there's a break in the line and there's water being wasted?
So, Mr. Mayor, I look at this in two different ways. One is every year we have advanced metering on all of our wells, all of our booster stations, and then, of course, we have our customers' meters. Every year, we report to the Arizona Department of Water Resources how much water we produced and how much water we delivered. And the difference between what we produced and what we delivered, and there is a difference, is we call it either non-revenue water or lost and unaccounted for water. The state of Arizona allows you to have up to 10% lost and unaccounted for water in your water system. Oro Valley has been between 0.5 and 2.5% for almost the last decade, I think. That's almost unheard of, that's really low. That's awesome. So that's one metric we look at, is what is our system's lost and unaccounted for water. Now, thanks to AMI and WaterSmart, that's where we can help our customers between the meter and their house. You know, they say, hey, I don't have anything on. And we're looking at tick marks all across the day saying, well, you got water going somewhere. And that's where our conservation specialists will go out. We'll do a water audit. We'll check their meter. And literally every time we find a leak somewhere. So we look at it twofold. We look at it, the system lost and unaccounted for water. And at the customer side, we'll call that lost and unaccounted for water. So we do, we look at both metrics and we go after both of them.
Well, that loss, I mean, that's wonderful. But there, that is a significant spread, 0.5 to 2.5. As you monitor that from year to year, is it fluctuating? Do you see the loss? Are we on a
Mr. Mayor, it's been going down. And one of the reasons why it isn't so much that the system got better, it's reporting better. For example, you know, Golden Ranch Fire District, they go and they'll flow test fire hydrants. We've trained them to be much better in metering that water. So for example, there was the time when they wouldn't report every time they tested a hydrant or did a drill on one of our hydrants. I mean, because they may pump 30, 40,000 gallons through a hydrant and they wouldn't report it to us. Well, for us, that's lost and unaccounted for water. We don't know where it went. Now Golden Ranch is excellent at every month they give us, you know, a spreadsheet. Hey, here's how much water we used in the system for testing our whatever it is they do. Having that accounting of everybody using water that isn't, because it isn't metered sometimes. Another thing is, if you'll notice on our fire hydrants, they all have the hydrant defenders, the locks on them, mm-hmm. and that's to prevent unauthorized use. Yes. It's been going down every year since I've been here. And like I said, I don't think it's because the system miraculously got better. I think we just got better at accounting for the water that's being used.
That's tremendous, whatever the reason. We'd like to see that downtrend in water loss.
Yeah.
The levels 1, 2, 3, and 4, you said we've been in level 1 for 10 plus or years. What's before level 1?
Use as much as you want, whenever you want, throw caution to the wind. Let me look here.
I guess my question is, Mr. Aver, is there really anything other than level 1, 2, 3, and 4?
I think it's very appropriate to stay in level 1. What does it really mean? You're making the community aware that you live in a desert environment. The water resources are precious. Let's use them wisely. I think we should stay in level 1, minimum level 1 in perpetuity. It just lets us message the community that water is really important in the desert.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, Mr. Abraham, what is it could our system go to a level 2, but surrounding water districts or the Tucson water, I mean, they would not necessarily go to level 2?
For an isolated problem within our system, absolutely. If it was a overreaching water resource shortage that affected all of Arizona, I would expect, you know, when I talk to my colleagues, we talk about these things. I would expect if there was like a regional shortage that was affecting us all, we'd probably all say, hey, you know what? Let's declare a level 2. There's reasons why just one water service provider would have a level 2 and another one would have a level 1 based on just, yeah.
Sure. And it sounds like if that were to happen, that it would be on a temporary basis. When you're talking about an independent water system, right? You're talking about a...
Mr. Mayor, correct. You know, I fully expect during my tenure here not to have a true regional water resource problem. We've just done so much to firm our resources and we haven't prepared it for drought. We've been preparing for water shortage. We're so firmed. I don't expect to have to deal with that problem. I do expect to have to deal with isolated system supply problems localized to parts of our system.
Any additional questions? So seeing none, Mr. Abraham, we certainly appreciate your presentation, responses to council's questions. We appreciate you and your entire department. And thank you so much.
And Mr. Mayor, council, thank you for your continued support of your water utility. That is why we're successful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Council, I'm going to adjourn our study session this evening and say goodnight to everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Nice to have Steve Solomon back.
Yeah, certainly. Welcome back, Steve.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone.